So this week's parsha is Vayera. So it's the parsha that teaches us about chesed. Chesed is a big word. Chesed is a very abused word. When you ask for girls who are going on shidduchim dates and they ask for, they're checking up on the boy and they want a resume. So the word chesed on the resume is like something everyone says, oh, if it says chesed, it means he's not doing anything else. It means he's not learning. You know what I'm saying? You ask about a girl and you say she's a balas chesed. Oh, it means she has no brain. She's probably not pretty. Wrong. Chesed is the biggest word in the Torah. How do you know that chesed is such a big word? Because it tells us that when Hashem traveled to Har Sinai, how did he travel, so to say, to Har Sinai? So it says that he traveled ba'av ha'anon. Ba'av ha'anon, on a cloud. Ba'av. Av is ayin beis. Ayin beis, right, that's the cloud that he sort of traveled on, whatever that means. Ayin beis equals 72. The word chesed, chesamach dalet, equals 72. Kadosh Baruch Hu travels on chesed. Chesed, oylem chesed yibaneh. So we know that chesed is a very big word. And we learn chesed as Jews from this week's parasha. Now, there's a couple of questions that I'd like to answer, and then I'll tell you about my trip to California. So, it says the following. Vayera elav Hashem aloni mamre, Hashem appeared to him in aloni mamre, v'hu yeshei pesach ha'oel, and Avraham Avinu was sitting at the doorway of the of his tent, kichoyim hayom, in the heat of the day. So, we know, everybody knows, when you go to school, they teach you the story that it was the third day of his bris milah and the third day of any operation that a person has, the third day of healing is the hardest day, is the most painful day. So this was the third day after a 99-year-old man, right, had a bris milah. So he wasn't feeling exactly chipper. And Hashem saw that. And Hashem didn't want that he should be busy helping people that day. So Hashem, we all know, he took out the sun, and he made it 160 degrees in the shade in the desert so that nobody would be traveling, so that Avraham Avinu would be able to rest. And it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem himself, came to be Mevakeh Chole, came to visit the sick. That's where we learned Bikur Cholim from. Hashem himself came, right? And he saw that it bothered Avraham Avinu so much that he had no guest, that it was more painful for him not to have guests than it was the pain that he was going through. So Hashem decided to send these three angels dressed up as Arabs, in the worst condition that you could imagine. They were not the emperor of Saudi Arabia exactly. One was a camel driver and one was a merchant. They were filthy and smelly. And that's who came to visit Avraham Avinu, who was the richest, most powerful man in the whole world. So the question that the girls ask and other people ask, if Hashem knew that it bothered Avraham Avinu more not to do chesed, then why did he put this, then why did he do this whole game with making it so hot? Hashem knew who Avraham Avinu was. Hashem knew that Avraham Avinu would rather do chesed in pain, right, than sit and do nothing. So if Hashem knew that, why did Hashem have to take out the sun, make it hot? Oh no! Oh no, Avraham Avinu doesn't like it like this. Put away the sun and send in the angels. Hashem knew that beforehand. So what's going on over here? So this is a very important lesson. It's not a lesson that I'm going to tell you my famous story of the nursing home, because you all know that story. But what Hashem wants to teach us here is something that I think is important to everyone in this room and to every Jew. And then we'll go into California. I'll explain to you a little bit about why I wasn't here and why I was in California, what happened. So there's a big chiddush here. There's a big secret here. And the secret here is that most people feel that they can help other people and you can do chesed if you're okay. If I'm in good shape and I have money, so I can help other people. But if I don't have money myself, I can't help. If I'm not healthy myself, I'm not happy with myself, I don't have any self-esteem, whatever it is, so then how can I give somebody else self-esteem? What Hashem wanted to show us all here was, specifically, Hashem took out the sun for us to see. He took out the sun, and he showed us that to Avraham Avinu, even though he was in so much pain, so he was in pain, first of all, chayla, he's sick, it's part of an amitzvah. Not machayev to if you're in bed with 104 temperature, to go downstairs, open the door, and do chesed. So he was potter. He was a chayla. Third day after a bris milah. Hashem wanted to show us a lesson that even when you're in pain, when you're having a bad day, when you're depressed, when stuff isn't working out for you, there is such a person that it bothers him, even though he's in so much pain, it bothers him that he can't help someone else. And that's why the Torah tells, of course Hashem knew that he's going to take out the sun and it's going to bother him, that there's no, and he's going to, no guests, and he's going to have to send, he knew who Avraham Avinu was. But he wanted to teach all of us an amazing lesson, and that means that even if you're in pain and you're going through your own stuff, you can still say a good word to someone else. You can still make somebody happy. And you all know the story with the nursing home and the window and the wall, and how he didn't have a window and he made a window for somebody else. And that's what the Torah is telling us over here. The Torah is telling us over here that even if you're in pain, it's the worst day of your refuah, and you're not mechayev, nothing, but you could be such a person that even though you're going through stuff, you're able to help others. I knew such a woman. I spoke by her yard site, actually, in Seagate two nights ago. I knew such a woman who had cancer for 15 years and never told a person. Didn't tell her children. She used to go get chemo. She used to sneak around. Her own children never knew that she had. She had a table in her dining room that seated 40 people. You never saw such a table. Mamash, from here almost to the door, because every Shabbos, that table was full of guests. And she was suffering chemo, the whole works. Her own kids, not only the guests didn't know about it, her own kids didn't know till the end before she died that she was suffering with cancer for so long. So a person, and we're not only talking about Avraham Avinu here, we're talking about people in our generation. She just passed away 2 years ago. So these are people in our generation where she was suffering with her own sickness. She didn't let anybody know. She was busy taking care of everybody else. And that comes from our DNA, our spiritual DNA, which comes from Avraham Avinu. But it goes on. And the Pasuk says, and this is very important when it comes to helping others, and also when it comes to helping yourself. Vayisa Einav. It says that Avraham Avinu lifted up his eyes. Right? This whole pasuk is a very hard pasuk. Right? If I'm expressing to you that Avraham Avinu looked at somebody, he looked up, right? So I would say, Vayar. It always says, Vayar, right? He saw him. It seems to be that these extra words, Vayisa Einav, he lifted up his eyes. What does that mean? He lifted up his eyes? What does that mean, he lifted up his eyes? Why does the Torah have to tell us this? And the answer is that if you keep your head on the ground and you never lift your head up and you're always looking down, then you're never going to see. You're never going to see the world. You're never going to see another person. And you're never going to see another person in pain. The worst thing in the world is something called atzvus, is depression. It's when a person is always looking down on other people, always looking on the floor. Vayisa Einav. The first thing a person has to do, you have to lift up your eyes. You have to lift up your eyes. You're not an animal. An animal's on all four, and its face naturally is looking at the floor. We're humans. Our face is not naturally looking at the floor. Today it is, because everyone's looking at their cell phone. So today, naturally, you're always looking down. But the way God created us is you're supposed to be looking forward. Of course, not at the wrong things, but you're supposed to be looking forward. We're not animals. We're supposed to be looking forward. But a person's always looking down. He's looking down at everybody. He's always looking down. He's not feeling good about himself. He's not feeling good about the world. He's not feeling good about God. He's always looking down. Then there's no vayar. There's no seeing. So the first thing has to be vayisa einav. The first thing is you have to lift up your eyes. But that also has to do with you yourself. And it's an interesting point. I was explaining to a girl last night. So she's going through a lot of stuff. And she doesn't have what we call self. It's not a girl language exactly, but in boy language, when you say a guy doesn't have self, That means he has no self-esteem. It's an expression, right? You have no self. That means there's no you. There's like, you know, if the wind blows to the east, you're going to the east. If the wind blows to the west, you have no self-esteem. In boy language, the way we used to talk is, you know, even on the basketball court, this guy has got no self. We don't got to worry about him. Like, he's not going to the basket. He's like, you know, if they let me play, I'll play. If they don't let me play, I won't play. So there's a thing called self. Now, some people go through their whole life, and they're like the loneliest thing in the whole world, which is, we know, the loneliest thing in the whole world, which the thing that has, the object that has no self in the whole world is a mirror. Because a mirror is just whatever looks into it. That's what it is. It has no self. You look in the mirror right now, there's people in the mirror. We put fruit in front of the mirror, there's a fruit, and it has no self. The mirror itself has no self. All it does is, it's created, all it does is reflect. So there are people that walk around their whole life, and they just want to reflect. They want to reflect culture, and they want to reflect what's going on around them. But they themselves, when you ask them, who are you, they have no idea. Which brings me to a story that happened when I was in California. So I was in California for 2 days. And they set me up all these meetings. I was actually there for a specific reason, but being that I was there, they set me up all these meetings to meet different kinds of, to meet people. So I want to tell you a story about a little boy first. So these people are not sure, they're not religious yet, and they have a little boy, and he's not doing that well in school, and they already said he has ADHD and ADD and AD everything, and he needs medicine, and he needs all this, and he needs all that, and the parents are very distraught, and they'd like me to meet him. So they'd like me to meet the boy and to meet the family. So I had my marching orders, what I had to do in California, you know, on the hour. So I went to the house, and it's in Beverly Hills, not Stama House. This was a house. And I was like at the front gate. I was like, you know, whoa. But you say, you know, like, oh, nice gate, you know. And I ring the bell or whatever it was, and they buzz in, and this little beautiful Jewish boy walks out with these huge brown eyes, and he doesn't know me, I don't know him, but I look at him, I already can understand a little bit what's going on, because it says the bigger the eyes, the bigger the neshama, because a person's eyes are their window to the neshama. So if you look at a person's eyes, that's why it says Leah's eyes were rakos. It uses the word beautiful eyes many times in the Torah. It's not talking about physical beauty. Torah is never talking about physical beauty. So eyes tell a lot, because eyes are the window of the neshama, and that's why a person's really, you're not supposed to look into a boy's, not supposed to look into a girl's eyes, and a girl's not supposed to look directly into a boy's eyes, because your mamash, there's a connection between neshamas. So when you talk to, my Rebbe always says, when you talk to women, never look in their eyes, look to the side. The eyes are probably the most powerful organ in the human body, because they take everything in. And once you see something, that's why Shmiras Einayim, not watching certain movies and not watching certain things, are very important. Because once it's in, it can't come out. Chas v'sholom, you know, if someone gets a concussion and their brain begins to play back what they've seen their whole life, which happened to me in a football game, so everything's in your brain. Everything you've ever seen, everything you've ever looked at is in your brain. So when you look at things that you're not supposed to, it's there. And it's taped, it's there. And there's no erasing it, sort of. You can push it in the back and push it all the way in the back, but it's there. And that's what the whole thing of Shmiras Einayim is, not to see it in the first place. Yes, you can push it in the back, you can do tshuva, but the ma'aseh, it's there. It makes an impression, it's there. So Shmiras Einayim is very big, and therefore, I looked at this boy's eyes, and I was like, wow, this is a heilige neshama, this is a holy soul. So the first thing I asked him, non-religious, totally non-religious family, I don't think, you know, this boy goes to some kind of school, but so he's 6 years old. He's 6 years old. So I walk up to him the first time he sees me. The first thing I do is I take out a bag of candy. And I was told already that his mother's one of these nature food things. So I found these dried apples. I don't know, whatever it was. A package. So I wasn't allowed to give him a lollipop or anything, because everything has to be natural. And I give him this bag. And he says, hi, who are you? And I'm like, I'm the rabbi. Hi, rabbi. I'm like, so tell me, where's Hashem? And it's this beautiful, sunny L.A., sunny California day. And I'm like, where's Hashem? Isn't Hashem up there? And he says, nope. And I'm like, oh, here we go. What's that game they all play, these kids? What do they call it? The M? There's an electronic game. What did the kids love today? Game Boy is 100 million years old. What? Yeah, it has something like that. It has a couple of letters. Everything today has letters, right? So I'm like, here we go. He's going to tell me Hashem's in his, whatever that game is, right? I said, Hashem's not up there? He goes, no. I'm like, where's Hashem? He goes, right here. Inside your heart, that's where's Hashem. I'm like, who told you that? He goes, nobody. I always knew that. I was like, this is my boy. This is a good shidduch. I like this. Anyway, I spent an amazing 2 hours with him, and he's Baruch Hashem not ADD, and he's not the ADHD. I did a little test. So first thing I asked him was, where's Hashem? The second thing I asked him is, where's the basketball court in his backyard? I wanted to play some ball with him. And the third question, I don't even remember what it was because I am ADD. And then we went to the back and we played ball. And we played basketball for an hour and then we played some soccer. And then before I left, he sat down and I said to him, tell me the first three questions I asked you when I got here. Now, anyone knows anything about ADD and ADHD, it's one of the tests, is that you have a problem changing channels. In other words, a person with ADD, if you stay on the same channel, you can watch a movie for 2 hours and not move. But if you change a channel, there's a bridge, there's a certain chemical bridge that you can't get back to where you started. So when the teacher is talking and then the teacher sort of goes off for a second or the child loses concentration for a second, he can't get back on the road without medication. So that's part of what ADD is, and I've been off that road many times. So when I speak in a big place, and I will write notes so that I know that I might get off the road, I might not be able to find my way back, so I have notes in order to bring myself back. So I wanted to see if this kid could answer the three things that I asked him 2 hours ago before we played ball and talked and did all these other things. There's no way that he would be able to repeat the three questions. Boom, boom, boom. One, two, three. Most kids without ADD would not have remembered. So the next day he had PTA, and Baruch Hashem, the teachers said they already don't think he has it and he's doing much better and whatever it was. I'm not saying again that that's the only test for ADD. I'm just saying that before we give kids medicine, make sure that's what they have. It's some kids really have it, and I know all about it, and some kids need medicine, but get a second opinion. And, don't pump the kids with medicine so fast. Anyway, the point that I want to make is that this kid knew where Hashem was. 6 years old, living in Beverly Hills, away from everything, and he knew where Hashem was. Now, my newest thing is that I go around to schools and I ask the question, what does Judaism mean? Now, another meeting that I had that day, so I got a phone call, and this woman who was setting me up with all these people said, okay, we want you in this house and we're going to send you the people to this house every hour on the hour, all these different people that you need to talk to in Wallstein. Now, there's a guy. He's huge. He's L.A. nightlife. He is a mogul. He is a billionaire. He has real estate all over L.A. He's a power player. He's a power broker. And he's a Jewish boy. And he's going out with a Catholic, non-Jewish girl. Your mission, Rabbi Wallerstein, is to break it up. I felt like Mission Impossible. I'm like, I don't know the guy. What do you think I am, right? That's your mission. Give it your best try. He's interested in meeting a rabbi. I'm like, okay, no problem. What time? 3 o'clock? Fine. I'm sitting at the table at 3 o'clock. No, nothing. So she calls me. He's outside in his sports car, right? And he's on a very important phone call. So he just said, you should wait until he's finished his phone call, whatever it is. Okay. I'm a patient guy, and I'm usually not on time, so I understand him. So he walks into the house. Movie star. Here back where everything's perfect, the $1 million watch. Movie star, right? Walks in, sits down across the table, a table like that table in front of us, sits down across the table, takes out two, either they were Blackberries or those, whatever those other robots are called, I forgot what they're called, androids, right? So it was either two droids or two Blackberries. I don't know what they were, but they were pretty big. Now, he's in the real estate business. Rodeo Drive, all the fancy stores, are his leases. All the stores in Manhattan that are all the designers are his leases. This is the man, okay? And here's Wallerstein from Brooklyn facing the man. And the man puts down these two phones, or whatever they were, and he looks at me and he goes, "You're the rabbi?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "You got 5 minutes." "I'm busy. You got 5 minutes." And his phones, which have email, are buzzing every second. This guy is getting an email on each phone. I never, ever in my life saw someone this busy. I'm serious. No, it was really busy, unless he was trying to impress me and he had one calling the other and they were calling back and forth. I'm not so sure. But he didn't need to impress me. Anyway, so I'm like, this is a challenge. And he's giving me 5 minutes to get him out of this Catholic girl thing that he's involved in. And I'm like, "You're giving me 5 minutes? I don't need your 5 minutes. I'm giving him Brooklyn attitude. You're doing me a favor? You think you came here today doing me a favor? I don't need your attitude. But by the way, since we have 5 minutes, I'd like to get to know you. Who are you?" He says, "Who am I?" I'm like, "Yeah, we're going to talk for four. Now we have 4 minutes. Who are you?" He goes, takes out his card, right? He says, "This is who I am." I take his card and I flip it off the table. And I'm like, "I didn't ask you for your card. I asked you, who are you?" He says, "I don't understand. What are you asking?" I'm like, "Who are you? How old are you?" He says, "I'm 39 years old." I said, "You're 39 years old. Who are you? What do you want? What are you doing? What are you doing in life? What you made enough money. I heard that you got enough money. So first of all, you walked in here, you put down these two things to impress me. Why do I have to see that you're so busy? Means that you're nobody. You're a mirror. You're just a reflection of everything that goes on around you." He goes, "Yeah? Well, you should see the girl that I'm dating. She is the most beautiful girl," and this is true. This is what they told me, that you have to know what you're fighting here. "She's the most beautiful girl in L.A., in Hollywood. In fact," he tells me, "that when I walk into the room with her, every guy turns around and every actress turns around. She is the most beautiful woman in L.A. I said, "Really?" "Funny. Like this relationship, how long is it going on?" He says, "I don't know, 5 years. I'm like, "And you're like really in love with her?" He goes, "Oh yeah." I'm like, "Funny, when you just described what happens, you said that when you walk into a room, everybody looks at her, including the actresses. You didn't say you look at her." I said, "Who are you? Are you a beautiful girl in your hand walking into a room? You don't even look at her. What's important to you is that when you walk into a room, everybody else looks at her." I'm like, "You're nobody. You have a lot of money?" I said, "Big deal." I said, "You're 39 years old." I said, "You're a loser." This guy's sitting here, nobody has the chutzpah to tell him he's a winner. Forget about telling, right? I'm like, he goes, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "You're 39 years old. I'm 54. I have Kanainahara, a wife, 5 daughters, 3 son-in-laws, Leah and her, and 9 grandchildren. You're 39 years old. If you got married today at 54, you could not have 1 grandchild. I am so unimpressed. They told me that there was a superstar coming to see me. You're 39 years old. You don't have a wife. You don't have a kid. You don't have grandchildren. What do you have? Money?" I said, "And what's the trauma, man? What's the trauma?" He goes, "What are you talking about? What kind of trauma?" I'm like, "Well, if there was no trauma, why do you have to prove to me you're so busy? Why didn't you stop working when you made enough money? There's some trauma back there. Did you ever starve? Were you ever hungry? What's going on?" So now he's like freaked out. So he's like, "You're a Kabbalist?" I'm like, "No. If I was, I'd be charging you a lot of money to see me." He says, yes, my parents were very, very wealthy. One of the wealthiest families where we lived. And we had apartment buildings and all kinds of, and my father made a crazy bad investment and we lost everything. And I'm going to make sure that that doesn't happen to me. So I'm going to work and I'm going to make enough money that never, ever, 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 ever can it happen to me what happened to my father. And not only that, I'm helping my parents and did. An hour and a half later, he came to the realization that in the end of it, he has no self. There's no him. He's his Maserati. He's his beautiful girl. He's his beautiful house. He's every party that he goes to in LA. But who is he? Who he is? But Yisa Einav? Who am I? No idea. No idea. But he has money. I said, you know, even your money is not worth anything. Because in the end, and so I told him the story of the Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim went once to a shul, and he was giving a Musar Shmuz, and he said that God runs the world, and if he wants, he could take your money away in 1 second. And after the shir, this religious Jewish man walked over and said to the Chafetz Chaim, with all respect, I understand what you're trying to say, that you could lose all your money, but I can't lose all my money in 1 second. Because I have 50 banks, this is the Chafetz Chaim's time, 50 banks in 30 countries. So yes, over my life I can make bad investments and in the end I can lose all my money, but in 1 second? No, no. 50 banks in 30 countries cannot go bankrupt in 1 second, which is true. So Chafetz Chaim says, you missed the whole speech. Who said that God has to take the money away from you in 1 second? God can take you away from the money in 1 second. A heart attack, you're gone. All that money, you're gone. So it could happen in 1 second. Now for this guy, that was mind-boggling. Because now the one crutch that he had, that he's working, and he's working, and he's working, and he's working. He says to me, oh my God, my grandfather died when he was 52. And my great-grandfather died when he was 52. I'm like, you better get with the program. So even money means nothing. Because in 1 second, all this work, I said, you're going to leave it over to save the elephants, save the whales, save the mosquitoes. I don't know. Save the bed bugs. Well, who knows? Whether there's going to be some new group that's going to come out there. You know, and that's where all your money and all your work, I said, you have to start a life. And then you have to have a Jewish wife. And you have to have Jewish kids. Listen to this. So then I'm looking across in the middle of the discussion before the end, and I'm like, so tell me, he's been a Reformed Jew, 5 generations American. 5 generations American Reformed Jews. So he knows nothing. So I said, translate to me, what does it mean to be a Jew? What does it mean to you that you are a Jew? What does Judaism mean to you? He says, Judaism to me means family. Judaism is family. We get together on Passover and everyone sits together, and I don't know who turned the air conditioning on, but I feel like I'm in the North Pole, so whoever turned it on can turn it down. So he says, family. Judaism is family. I'm like, well, I hate to tell you, but Italians are also family. And they're just as close as Jews are to each other. The Italians even go, 5th generation, hey, you mess with my cousin Vinny, I'm going to kill you. But he's your 5th cousin. I don't care. He's my cousin. So like we're like close to our 2nd cousins, but like our 5th cousins, we don't even know. So I'm like, well, if that's Judaism, then the Italians might have us beat. He goes, okay. I know what Judaism is. Judaism is never again. No more Holocaust. We're going to stand up for our rights. We live in America. Judaism is being a Jew and not going through what we went through anymore. Freedom! I'm like, you sound like Dr. Martin Luther King. So I said to him, so bottom line, you're a Jew, you don't even know what it means. Now, it's not so freaky because I've gone to Beis Yaakov's and I could even do it in this room and ask that question. Most people get the answer wrong. So I've gone to many different boys' schools and girls' schools, and I asked that question. And they're telling me, well, Ray Wallenstein, we don't know if we want you talking to our girls, because you talk about these subjects, and our girls don't really know anything about these subjects, so we don't know, we're not so comfortable. Could you be careful? Could you, like, just talk about chesed? You know, don't get into all that Facebook. They don't know what that is, and boys and girls, you know. So, like, you know, I'm like, no problem. I'm not getting into all those subjects because the chinuch in our school, they're already, you know, in high school, and the chinuch in our school is the best chinuch. The best chinuch is our school, because every school thinks the best chinuch. I'm like, okay, listen, I promise you, I'm not going to talk about Facebook, boys, drinking, drugs, abuse, nothing. I'm going to just ask one question. You sure, Rabbi? I mean, you know, because everyone's very nervous. I'm like, I promise you, mamish, you have nothing to worry about. Okay, so I've been doing this, and I go into the fourth grade, eighth grade, twelfth grade, and I ask this question. 12th graders, tell me, what is Judaism? You're a Jew, right? Everyone in this room is, if you met a non-Jew, and he walked over to you, right, and he said, I'm just using a name, Chani. Hi, we're in Brooklyn College together. Hi, Chani, how are you? I have no religion. And I'd like to become, I don't know what I want. You know, so I'm looking at Judaism. I'm looking at Muslim. And I'm looking at Christianity. So I want to know, tell me about your religion. What does it mean to be a Jew? So I asked the kids, what would you say? Connection to God. Christians are also connected to God. They pray to God all the time. My quarter is connected. My quarter is connected to God. My dime, my penny. In God we trust. So that's not an answer. Every religion thinks they're connected to God. And they are. Goyim are connected to God. Right? They're created also in the form of God. So they're non-Jews are connected to God. Okay, you in the back. Come on, what is it to be a Jew? What is Judaism? Judaism, this is 99.9% of the answers. Judaism is a religion. Judaism is not a religion. I don't like religion. Judaism is not a religion. Yeah, Christianity is a religion. And Buddhism is a religion. And Hinduism is a religion. And the Muslims is a religion. Yiddishkeit doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that it's a religion. So now I got these 12th graders in the best school because the principal told me, my chinuch, don't you dare talk about anything. My chinuch is up here. I'm like, yeah, nice. Nice, 12 years in yeshiva and they can't tell me what it means to be a Jew. Nah, good chinuch. You know, the Lama Tess Malach is back with the floor. It's nice. But here you have some person, I want to understand, what is Judaism? They're telling me religion. So then manashtana. Why should I be a Jew? Christianity is a religion, and all these other things are religion. If that's what Judaism is, it's a religion, so I could pick any religion I want. What is Judaism? I'm asking this guy. And he's looking at me, and he's like, I don't know. I'm like, but you told me you're so proud to be a Jew, you don't even know who you are. And then I said to him something that hurt him very much. Too bad. He only gave me 5 minutes. I said, when I asked you what Judaism is, you told me, never again the Holocaust. I said, you're worse than the Germans. You see, the Germans didn't kill every Jew. Some of us got away. You marry this Catholic girl. From you, no more Jews. Dunsky. I said, it came out of your mouth. Never again! So you said never again? You're going to get married to a non-Jew and all your children are not going to be Jewish and grandchildren and great-grandchildren? At least by the Nazis, some of us got out. By you, no one's getting out. It's over. Your house is worse than a concentration camp. Because from your house, no Jew will ever walk. This guy's like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? Rabbi, I'm coming to New York City. We're going for dinner. I'm like, you bet. We need to talk. And then he goes outside and he's got this huge, I don't know what it was, but it was a Mercedes. And he's talking about never again, the Nazis and the whole story. Meanwhile, he buys Mercedes. I'm like, thank you. My grandfather's in the engine. Thank you. Thank you for buying that machine. Really appreciate it. Nice. So what is Judaism? So we have all these people learning Torah with such great education. All you nice ladies sitting in this room. What is Judaism? Matzah balls? Kreplach? Challah? Chillin'? Kishka? That's what most of my friends say.
Life.
Judaism is life.
A living religion.
Not a living religion. Judaism is life. Yiddishkeit is life. Right, Wallerstein, what are you talking about? They could say Christianity is life. They could say Buddhism is life. Let me tell you the difference. Let me tell you the difference. You wake up in the morning. You say, Moda ani lefanecha. You wash your hands. You say, Anatilas yadayim. You go to the bathroom. You say, Asher yatsa. Every part of your life is connected to God. All the other religions, when they go to church, or they go to the Muslims, go to the mosque, they pray. Absolutely. They have Ramadan, they have all the Kratzmach, they have all their holidays. But day to day, minute to minute, second to second, no. A Jew, your whole life, every second of your life is a mitzvah, is a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're either davening, or you're eating, and you're making a bracha, you're eating. Or you're working so that you can make money, so that you can buy and do mitzvos. Everything that we do, it's a life plan. And of all the religions in the world, it is the only religion that is a life plan. Go to the bathroom, gotta make a bracha. You're getting married, you gotta make a bracha. Whatever you do, picking up band, whatever you do, Shabbos candles, you have to make a bracha. Everything you eat has a bracha rishayna and a bracha achrayna, a bracha before, a bracha after. It is life. You see the yam, a beautiful ocean, you make a bracha yamagodol. You hear lightning. If you hear lightning, you're in good shape. You see lightning, you hear thunder, you make a bracha. On an earthquake, you make a bracha. There's nothing you don't make a bracha. You don't see a friend for 30 days, you make a mechayem eisen. Something you didn't eat, something new that you put on. You put on a new clothing. You make a malbush harumim. You make a shechianu. It's life. It's every second of your life. The way you get dressed, if it's tznius, it's every second that you get tznius. Your tznius is this. That's your tznius. I have tzitzis on all the time. And my tzitzis are on to remind me that every second of my life, I'm connected to Hashem. You don't have a mitzvah of tzitzis. What do you have a mitzvah? Of tznius. So when a girl is tznius, outside she's dressed tznius, she is just as holy as the guy who has his tzitzis hanging out from all four sides. Exactly the same thing. Because every time she looks at herself in the mirror, she's looking at a pair of tzitzis. She's looking at a person who says, I am different than the rest of the world. I am a Jew. It's a joke. It's a real rabbi joke. Because everybody in L.A. wanted to know who are not Jewish. What are those things? Like when you pull them, do you start speaking? I'm like, no, when you pull them, I stop speaking. We all have strings attached, so to say. So tznius is something that reminds you all the time that I'm different. It's not a punishment, that God's angry at you. It's your uzachartem, uri'isem oisai, uzachartem, es kol mitzvais Hashem. So it's every second of your life. You get onto a bus, and you get up out of the chair so an old lady should sit down, right? Which is part of life. That's being Jewish. The other religions don't have that. They call that manners. Some people don't have manners. You wash your hands, you come out of the bathroom. You wash your hands before you eat bread. So I explained to him, it's not a religion, and it's definitely not a subject. You can't pass or fail. You're not going to come up to Shemayim and get a report card at the end of 120 years. Okay, let's see. What mark do we give her on Chumash? That's just in schools. It is life. And therefore, this week's Parsha, when it talks about Avraham Avinu, right? It's life! His chesed is life! The man's in pain! He can hardly stand! He's in pain! And all he's worried about is his three Arabs! Low life, dirty, smelly! They weren't rich Arabs, the Gemara says. And that's all he's worried about. Why? Why is he worried about? Because Avraham Avinu was a Jew. And that's life. Life is helping someone else. Doesn't matter how much pain you're in. Oh, if anyone would understand that, you'd be so excited. We wouldn't be going through all the suffering that we're going. Depression? Why are people depressed? Why are Jewish kids depressed? Because you cut off your life. If Judaism is life, and you're not giving Shabbos, and you're texting on Shabbos, of course you're going to get depressed. If it's a religion, big deal. So I'm out of school, not a religion. But if it's not life, if you cut yourself away from life, so what happens? You get depressed. You're disconnected. And that's this week's parasha. Kichayim Hayoyim was the hottest time of the day. And Avraham Avinu said, but it's life. And I can't live as sick as I am. If I can't help somebody else, I'm dead. But Yisrael Einov, he lifted up his eyes. He stopped looking at the floor. That's what I told this guy. I said, you have to start looking at yourself without the girl on your hand, without the Maserati, without the beautiful Mercedes. Sit down by yourself on the beach and think about who you are. And don't look at your card. And close your phones. He said, I think I'd have a heart attack if I did that. I said, you're 39 years old. It's time to find out who you are. And it's hard. And a girl called me last night and she's going through a lot of stuff and she's growing. And she has no self at all, zero. Her whole life, everybody, whatever they told her, that's what she did. Abused, terrible, terrible, terrible life. And Baruch Hashem, we're working with her and she's getting better. And yesterday, I'm in Boston the last 2 days with someone who was sick and I get a text. Rav Wallerstein, help. I need help. I'm very lonely. I need someone to talk to. And I'm like, absolutely, you're very lonely. Because part of when you get your own self, part of it is that you're by yourself. And being by yourself sometimes is very lonely. And that's part of growing, to be by yourself. It's not what you need to do your whole life, but at certain times, a person needs to be by themselves. They need to turn off their phone. You need to turn off the outside world. Yes, it's lonely to be by yourself, but guess what? You're going to meet someone that's going to blow you away. And that's you. And when you meet yourself, all of a sudden you won't be lonely anymore. And that's what everybody needs to work on, because everyone is so busy. We have no idea who we are. And we can be 39 years old and we can be the best in the class and busiest in the world, and we're no one. We're just a mirror, a piece of glass with some silver behind it. And that's what the Torah wants to teach us all the way in the beginning by Avraham Avinu. And it doesn't stop. It says, Vayisa Einov, he lifted up his eyes, and then Vayah, when you lift up your eyes, he saw. Hine Shleisha Anashim Nitzavim Alav. There were three men standing on him. Alav means like right in front of him, in his face. But then the Pasuk, sort of in the same Pasuk, says the opposite. Vayar, again he saw, which is a question why twice. Vayarat l'krasa mipesach ha'ela ishtach u'atza. And he ran to meet them. 1 second, you just said 2 seconds ago that Nitzavim Olav, they were standing in front of him. So if they were standing in front of him, why did it say he ran? To greet them. You make up your mind. If they're standing in front of me, why did I have to run to greet them? So this whole Pasuk is very hard to understand. The Pasuk says, Nitzavim Olav, they're standing on him, in front of him. And then it says, Vayar, Vayarat l'krasa. So it says again that he saw. What do you mean he saw twice? Beautiful shot. This is number one. It's the second, they say it in Yiddish, it's the second cook. It's the second look. When you look at a person the first time, that's not the one that counts. It's the second look. It's looking twice. A person who cares, a person who does chesed, it's not good enough just to see the look. To see the hand that the woman's holding out a shul that she needs money, that's the first look. And you put the dollar in her hand, but the second look is, oh my God, she's freezing. Let me go get her a coffee. Hey, you want a coffee? Because in shul there's always a coffee or a tea. Oh, I would love a coffee. The first look, you just put a dollar. You didn't see what was really going on. The second look, you see that she's shivering. It's the same thing with kids. It's the same thing as a teacher. Yeah, you see the kid and you make all of a sudden this judgment. She's not a good kid. No. Vayar, take a second look. If you take a second look in any relationship, the second look, vayar atzakrasam, then you're going to end up running to meet that person.
You're going to be able to get connected. It comes from the second look, not from the first look. Now, what's this running business if they're standing right in front of him? So Rav Shimshon Pinkus says, unbelievable. The Pasuk wants to tell us. They weren't standing right in front of him. They were far away. But Yarats across them, he ran to meet them. But when it comes to another person's problem, it has to be like it's right in front of you. It can't be a far. Oh, it's her problem. It's not my problem. I'll worry about it when I get there. No, says the Pasuk. Vayar, if you look a second time, Vayaratz across them, he ran to meet them. They were taka very far away, but Nitzavim Olov, to him, it was standing right in front of him. It was his problem. Your problem is my problem. That's very different than your problem. I got to help you with your problem. So what Avraham Avinu, what the Torah is teaching us in this Pasuk is, it's not, I got to help you with your problem. Your problem is my problem. Nitzav Olov. They were far away, but it was hot. He ran to them. But why did he run to them? Because they were out there, and he felt that if it's your problem, it's my problem. And that's a very big difference in the way that people work with people. Nothing against the therapy world, because I would never talk against the therapy world, being that Rabbi Ezra Max just walked in. But there's a very big difference between a therapist. Now, I know there's, you got to be mandated and this and what you're allowed to do and what you're taught in school and all that stuff. But I'm going to skip for that for a second. When a child feels that the person who's talking to them, that their problem is the person's problem, they open up and you can really help them. When they feel that it's my problem and she wants to help me with my problem, they close up. It's very different in a relationship. When someone's married and his wife is not comfortable and he's not comfortable, not that my wife's not comfortable, let me make you more comfortable. Everyone knows the famous story with the tzaddik that walked in and said, our foot hurts. And the doctor said, what do you mean our foot hurts? And he said, my wife's foot hurts, but where she's half and I'm half, so we're one, so our foot hurts. Very different in relationships when you look at the other person, that it's not her problem that I'm helping, it's my problem, because her problem is my problem. And that's what Avraham Avinu taught us here, and that's the second look. And we'll end. He says, if you could do me a favor, if I find favor in your eyes, please do not walk away from me. So I told you the story before where I was speaking in Queens and these three girls came up to me, and it's happened since then more than once, and they're like, you know, Rabbi Wallerstein, we'd like to ask you a question, but we think maybe it's a little bit chutzpah, so we don't know, we should ask you the question, could we ask you the question, should we ask you the question? I'm like, I gotta get home, ask me the question. So they pushed this one girl, you know, in the group of three, there's always the one that they push to be the speaker, right? So they're like, you ask him. So I'm thinking, they got some crazy question they got to ask me over here, you know, because they're like very embarrassed. And she says, well, Rabbi Wallerstein, should I ask him? You don't think it's chutzpah? You don't think he'll be angry? I'm like, hello, I'm here in front of you. Stop looking that way. Okay, I'm going to ask you. But Rabbi Wallerstein, don't be angry. That's all I'm asking. I'm like, I got to go home. Ask the question. Okay, do you think it would be okay if me and my two friends, these are my two friends. I'm like, figured that out already, right? Would it be okay if me and my two friends would sort of like maybe kind of, I'm sure this is chutzpah. I'm like, just cuts it out. She goes, what does that mean? I'm like, just say it. Okay, I'm going to say it. Wallerstein, this is okay. Would it be okay if me and my two friends would come to you for Shabbos? I'm like, hello? I'm not such a scary person. What do you think we do Shabbos that it's so scary? I mean, I say Dvar Torah, but I don't keep talking the whole Shabbos. I mean, you don't have to sit at the table for like 8 hours. She goes, no, maybe it wasn't covered to ask the Rav, you know, if we could come to the Rav and the Rebbetzin for Shabbos. I'm like, I'll call my wife and I'll ask her if we're having guests for Shabbos. No big deal. Like, what's the big deal, you know? Not a big deal. They were so scared to ask me. Now imagine if I told you the story the other way around. Tonight I'm going to finish my shiur, and I'm going to pick out three girls in the crowd. I'm going to walk over to them and say, could you come here? I got to talk to you for a minute. Yes. They're already scared. What did he find out? How did he know? Oh, my God. She was watching while I was speaking, and I was texting. Oh, no. We're all three in trouble. He knows. We were in King's Plaza. All kinds of mices. They're scared, right? And I'm like, I'd like to ask you something, but I don't know. It might be chutzpah if I'm going to ask you. I'm going to do the whole same thing that they did. I don't know. Could I ask you? Should I ask you? And they're like, Rabbi Wallerstein, you could ask us anything. Whatever you need. How can we help you? And I'm like, I don't know. It might be chutzpah. It might be wrong. I don't know. I don't know what I should do. Maybe I should call my wife, ask her reshus. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to ask you. And they're like, okay, Rabbi, come on. We got to get home, you know? The accessor ride is waiting. We got to get home, right? And I'm like, okay. I'm going to ask, but don't get angry. Would it be okay if I invite you to come to my house for Shabbos for a meal? Would that be okay? They're like, Rabbi, thank you. Sure, we'll come. Right? You think I'm out of my mind, right? Well, what's wrong with you? I would never do that, by the way. Avram Avinu, the king of the world. Three filthy, smelly Arabs coming out of the desert. The king of the world, Av Hamoin Goyim, bows down after the third day of his bris milah. He bows down to them. Vayarach, he runs to them. And what does he say to them? If you like me, could you do me a favor and come into my house, wash your feet, have pickled tongue with mustard, right? And a whole meal, and sit under a tree and cool off, and we're going to give you a drink, and we're going to take care of you. Could you do me a favor? Please come to my house. I'll no savor. Please don't walk by my house. Please. Hello? These guys should have been on their knees begging. Abraham, can we come into your house for a drink of water? You know, hello? Or in Arabic, you know, however you say it, right? But Avraham Avinu is saying the opposite. If you like me, come into my house. That's sort of the guy knocks on the door Sunday morning, you all get this, right? The guys who are collecting money, right? And you open the door and there's that guy collecting money and you're like, oh my gosh. Could you do us the biggest favor? Could you come and sit for breakfast? And how about, could we buy you a new suit? Could we get you a car? Really, if you really like us, you'll let us buy you a car and get you a new suit. What are you, Meshuggah? Right? The guy's happy that you don't slam the door. And my father's not home. My mother's not home. I'm not home. This is a tape. Every Sunday from 8 to 11, we play this tape. No one's home. Look at Avraham Avinu. Look at Avraham Avinu, girls. So what's he doing here? Is he a fool? What's he telling them? Do me a favor, right? He calls himself their slave. Avraham Avinu calls himself their slave. And the answer is that if Judaism is life, then when somebody needs help and you're able to help them, you're grabbing a chunk of life. So who owes who? Who owes who in that connection? You're giving me a chance to do a mitzvah, and Judaism is life. So who's whose servant? I'm your servant. You're giving me oxygen. You're giving me life. Do me a favor. Come to my house and give me life. If you like me, you're not going to walk by and not come to my house and take away life from me. You're going to come into my house. You're going to give me life. That's chesed. That's Parshas Vayera. That's what Judaism is. And like the little boy said, it's in here. It's all in here. And if you live your life like that, and you get up in the morning, and you look at the sun, and you look at the creation that Hashem created, and you plug in, we just climbed Bear Mountains, Baruch Hashem, I made it up and down in one piece. Wow, the sun was setting in the mountains. I was like, what? Hashem, you created this for me? You didn't have to. I live in Brooklyn. But thank you! Bear Mountains on the top of the mountain at the ranger station, 500 miles of woods and mountains. I had these 25 New York City high school girls with me. Their eyes were bugging out.
wow, so many trees. You know, there were so many trees in the world. Amazing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. So being a Yid, living in this world, being a Jew, that's life. It's not a religion. It's not a subject. It's not oppressive. Shabbos is life. So you're going to text on Shabbos. You're going to be Machal Shabbos. You're cutting yourself away. What do you think you're going to have in the end? What are you going to have in the end? What? A pretty girl on your arm? A fancy car? What are you going to have in the end? Nothing. They're going to put you in a box and put you in the ground, and you never lived the life that Hashem gave you. Because you were busy doing what? So I'm going to end with this story that I heard in Eretz Yisrael. Matzah Yom Kippur. And I think we all need to understand this. This is very, very important. And the truth is, I don't want to scare you, but every siman that was ever written about the times of Mashiach, if you look at the Chofetz Chaim al HaTorah in this week's parasha, Mamish, we lost two boys going to yeshiva. We lost Rosh Yeshiva of Mir Yeshiva, Gadol Hadar. We lost the Gedolah Hadar. We lost the Sari Menu of the Dar, the Rebbetzin Kayanevsky. You know what happened in the last year and a half? It's not normal. We lost the Makubal of the Dor, we lost the Rosh Yeshiva of the Dor, we lost the Rebbetzin of the Dor, we lost two boys from Flatbush, another kid in Eretz Yisrael, a kid drowned, another kid got burnt to death this week. Like crazy stories. Arab Spring, all the countries are being taken over, and 80% of the vote belongs to the Brotherhood of Islam. Exactly what it said was going to happen. We're there. We're deep in the times of Mashiach. And today they were nice enough, and yesterday they were nice enough to say that the IEA, whatever it is that watches nuclear weapons, has come to the conclusion that the Iranians at this point are right now in the middle of building 5 nuclear weapons. And the Russians, whose Esav said to Yishmael that the only way to deal with the Iranians is through peace talks. As it says in the Navi, that Esav and Yishmael will get together at the end of time. We're there. So what are you bringing home? A Maserati? So Matzah Yom Kippur, this big tzaddik came to my house. He told me the following story. We'll end with this. He said that there was a multi-billionaire, very, 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 very rich man. And he kept all his gold. He kept all his money in gold because gold stays valuable. And all that gold was in the middle of a safe in the middle of his house, but a huge, thick, thick safe. And there was a guy who knew about it. And he had to try to figure out a way to get all that money. But he knew that the man and his wife were always home. So he decided that he's going to go visit the man, whatever the guy was doing. Let's say he was in real estate. I don't know what he was in buildings. He had a system of alarms, and he was going to go in as a salesman to meet this man, this billionaire. And once he met him, he became his friend, and they started to talk, and they started to do a little business together. And slowly but surely, they became very, very, very good friends. And they used to go out to eat together, him and his wife and the two couples. And after 2 years, this young guy who was the ganav, who was the robber, tells the billionaire, listen, you know, you gave me so much business, and now I'm on my own. I want to give you something back. You work so hard. I just bought 2 tickets for you and your wife for a 3-week cruise on the Queen Elizabeth. I totally paid for it. I know you don't need me to pay for it. But, you know, to be a good person, you got to give back. So, from Thanksgiving past Christmas, I would like you to go on the Queen Elizabeth, and it's all paid for, it's all on me. I got you the best cabin, the biggest cabin. This guy gives him a big hug. He says, you know, I'm an older man, and I don't have that many friends left in the world, and I'm so happy that I met you. You're really special, and I like you. And we're going to do a lot more business together. And he goes, you know, I really like you. I never had a father. You're my father figure, and I really like you, and I'm looking forward to this relationship. You should be healthy for a long time. Okay. So the wife and the husband, these millionaires, billionaires, get on the boat. And they're there for 3 weeks. And they're going from room to room. Everything's paid for. There's billiards. There's a casino. There's a pool. All the drinks prepaid. The guy, you know, this old man never spent this kind of money on himself. And he's like, every place he goes, he blesses this young guy. Bless me, he should be blessed, this kid. Wait till I get back. If you think I gave him business till now, I am going to give him so much business. And him and his wife, they haven't had this kind of fun in the longest time. It's the Queen Elizabeth. It's nightclubs and shows and casinos and swimming and massages and she's getting her nails done and pedicures and manicures, and it's just like they're being treated like royalty, and they just keep blessing him wherever they go. Meanwhile, he's got his boys in the house with blowtorches, and it took them, they knew it would take at least 2 weeks. 2 weeks they're in that house with blowtorches burning through that safe. And finally, at the end, they get the safe open and they steal all the gold. Now, this guy comes back and he drives up to his house and he tells his wife, the first thing we have to do when we get home, when we get inside, is we gotta call our good friend and we gotta tell him that we want him over for dinner tomorrow night. What he just did for us, nobody ever did for us. So they're all excited, they're gonna call him up, they walk into the house, and it's a churban. And right away the man runs upstairs to the safe. The whole safe is burnt open and all his gold is gone. And he realizes that the whole thing was a setup. This guy was no friend. The whole business that the guy set up was just to get inside his house. He sent them away on a boat ride for 3 weeks because that's how long he needed to be in that house without being disturbed. And he realized that he was fooled and he lost everything. And he immediately tries to find him and track them, numbers disconnected, all addresses are disconnected, gone, goodbye. He doesn't exist anymore. It was a fake name, it was a fake business, the whole thing was a setup just to get into his safe. The tzaddik turned to me and he said, this is the story of the satan. Each one of us has a safe. A neshama, a soul, where all our valuables are. Every one of us has all our valuables in that neshama, including Hashem, like that little boy said. And the Yetzer Hara is very smart. He makes friends with us. Friends. Let's have the big word. Fun! Let's have fun, because that's what life's all about. Life's all about fun! We gotta have fun, we gotta do this, we gotta do that, we gotta do this. And he gets closer and he pulls you in. And then for your whole life, you're just having fun and you're getting the pedicures and the manicures and the massage and the money and the movies and the TV and the DVD and the Facebook and the guys and all this stuff and all this fun. And you keep walking around and you're like, this is great, life is great. I'm a teenager, I'm having a good time. Well, I'm not a teenager. And I'm having a good time. It's one big party. And while you're having this party, he's sitting in a shama with a blowtorch. And he's pulling out of your shama every little piece of you. And it's a big party. And it's great. And I can't wait to thank him for all this fun. And then after 120 years, when you come upstairs and you open that safe where you put all those good things and there's nothing in it, you realize that he put you on the Queen Elizabeth, he put you on a trip through life where you were having fun so he could steal the most important thing that belongs to you.
Neshama.
And that's your neshama. And that's your soul. And it's too late. Much too late. And that's what this tzaddik told me on Matzah Yom Kippur, and he said, tell it to your girls. Tell them that the one that they think is their friend, while they're having their fun, he's stealing the essence of their soul. The essence of their soul. And in the end, when you want to point your finger
his name has already changed. He's already somebody else. When Yaakov Avinu asked the Malach, who is Esav, who is Yetzer Hara, Mashmecha, what is your name? What is your name, Satan? What is your name? What is your essence? He asked him. And he asked him, Lama Zet Tishal, are you stupid? What are you asking me such a stupid question, Yaakov? I don't have a name. I changed my name, which every woman and girl and guy that I deal with, I got a different name. Whether it's a boyfriend, or it's a TV, or it's a movie, or it's Lashon Hara, or it's jealousy, I got a million names. I got a million different names. Why are you asking me my name? My name changes. This generation, it's maybe the filth that's on your computer and the things that you're walking around and the cell phone. That wasn't my name 100 years ago. There was no cell phone 100 years ago. 100 years ago, it was Reform Judaism. Today, who wants to become a Reform Jew? Don't let him get into your soul and steal your essence. Because Judaism is the opposite. Judaism is life. Vayisa Einov, lift up your eyes. Vayar, see what's really important in this world. Vayaratz, run the krasim to meet it. And then we'll be able to bring Mashiach. It's not a joke what's going out there. Find out who you are. It's not a card. It's not a name. Spend some time with yourself. Find out who you are. And realize that we have been given the greatest present of all. Judaism, Yiddishkeit, is life. Chaim, which is life. And life is the most precious thing that we have. Hatzlacha. Good night.